Thank you, Tim. Good morning, everyone. What a great song to be singing just before coming up to speak with the victorious Jesus. I'm just moving up slightly. If you're sorry, you'll get a sore neck. And the singers will not be able to see me at all. But what a great song. And Helen, thank you as well for sharing that about the persecuted church. What a challenge when we live in relative comfort to be thinking of our brothers and sisters. And yes, it does sometimes feel far, far away, but God is calling us to serve Him and to encourage them. That's maybe even higher than I've ever had it before. But anyway, we're continuing our series on serving God where He has called you. And I really hope that the series has been nudging you and has been challenging you to maybe even get a new perspective on the situation that you're in. And maybe you're in a situation that actually you look at it and you think, how did I end up here? And yet God is calling you to serve Him right where you are. He's got purposes for you in the street that you live, in the place that you work, the school that you go to. And we've been reminded even earlier on in September that we're saved by faith alone, and yet it's not a faith that stands alone. Our response to the amazing grace of God is to say, Lord, what can I do for you? And so we've already been looking at, for example, how we can serve Him in a godly spiritual leadership and how we are growing up in an era more than ever where everyone does what is right in his or her own eyes. And in conversations even this past week, I was reminded to actually not just see that as something out there, but it's also within the church. The church is desperately starting to look more like the world out there, where actually we're called to holy living. And God is calling for godly leaders. And it's not just the CEO types, but godly leaders who can lead their homes and can lead the children and the youth and at all stages in life to lead people back to God and to bring about the spiritual renewal that we need. Well, you might think, but I'm not a leader type. Well, today, there's no excuse for any of us because the topic that we're looking at today, friendship, is something that we can all serve God in where He has called us. But let's just start with a story. I looked up a series that I have often found very powerful, and that is the mini-series Band of Brothers. But I realized it's already 16 years ago that it came onto our televisions. Band of Brothers told a story of what was called Easy Company. I don't know how many of you have seen it, but it's powerful and it gives a great insight into a time when I wasn't alive. But I know, for example, my grandfather would sometimes, but only seldomly, talk about, and it's a time, the Second World War, that my parents were born. But it's a story particularly about really a bunch of strangers who through circumstances get thrown together as very unlikely comrades. People from all kinds of backgrounds. But as the series goes on and as they serve together, we find that they are deeply connected, even willing to give their lives. Even referring to that band of brothers as not something that existed just as they were fighting the enemy, but continued to exist long after the war. And so they served each other, ultimately not as colleagues or as fellow soldier, but as true friends. And again, I'm just thinking what Helen was sharing about the persecuted church. Again, in our relative comfort, I think we've lost sight of the importance of the gift of friendship also in our walk with Jesus. And how hopefully today, as we look at Jonathan, we may even just be reminded and inspired again how Jonathan needed a friendship, but also how he was able to give a friendship to a David who, very young still, needed his friendship in order to become who he became. But also ultimately we'll look at how Jonathan points to the friendship that is available to each one of us in the Lord Jesus Christ. Now sadly, I think friendship is both undervalued and underestimated. For example, when you read 1 Samuel 18, people have hollowed out the idea of friendship so much and diluted it that a lot of people can't handle what we read about this friendship between Jonathan and David. And a lot of people have concluded that this deep affection can only refer to a sexual relationship. But it's not. There's no sexual reference right there. And so we live in a society that somehow can't handle it, but also is maybe in the greatest need than ever before. C.S. Lewis said, and this is a few years ago, but how true these words still are. He said, actually, very few modern people think friendship a love of comparable value or even love at all. And yet our society needs it. Our society needs it, and yet our individualism and our consumerism and our busyness means that I think maybe for a lot of us, we want it, but often have to conclude, actually, I should maybe do more about it. Well, let's look at the life of Jonathan. And really, we're mainly going to focus on the first four verses. Where first of all, we see in verse 1, a kind of the essence of friendship. Because we read and we're told in chapter 18, verse 1, that Jonathan became one in spirit with David. Very important to read that it's a becoming. It's a growing connection and affection that Jonathan had for David. Now, if you have an ESV translation or maybe other translations, we'll use even stronger language of calling it Jonathan being knitted to the soul of David. And it's a simple reminder that actually friendship is about a deep connection, isn't it? About a deep connection. As deep as it goes down to the soul, the spirit, the heart, or literally the gut. It's strange how we've somehow managed to move the idea of soulmate really just to refer to marriage. Whereas Jonathan seems to be thinking of it as actually that's possible in friendship. Now, this deep connection is incredibly surprising. Because these two had very little in common. Who was Jonathan? Jonathan was a prince. I can imagine that he must have grown up in a nice comfort in the palace of his father Saul. And who was David? He was a shepherd's boy. Not only was he a shepherd's boy, but do you remember when Samuel the prophet came to Jesse's home? That even the dad had to be reminded that he had another son who was out in the field? And yet these two had this deep connection. Now, is there any way in which we can figure out how this was possible? Well, one commentary said actually there might be a hint in the first half of that verse where we read that David had just finished talking with Saul. Now, the last verses of chapter 17 describe how David returns to Saul, and you got this gruesome picture that he's still holding the Philistine's head, who was Goliath. So it has just happened after his great victory over the giant Goliath. So what do you think they were talking about? Well, I can only imagine that David must have talked to Saul about his experience of defeating Goliath. And what kind of things do you think he would have talked about? About his amazing sling and you know how carefully he'd picked those five stones. No, I'm sure he would have said the same thing that he actually said to Goliath. You know, it had nothing to do with me. It was God who brought about this victory. I'm sure that he showed his faith and talked about his actions as an expression of his trust in the Lord. And you wonder if that is exactly what attracted the loyalty of Jonathan. And that actually their first kind of common ground, their first connection with one another was a spiritual one. Which again is a reminder that actually friendship is not just about being deeply connected, but the deepest connection you can have is a spiritual one. Friends who can pray together are deep friends indeed. And actually, when you read on in chapter 19 and then 20, you do see how faith comes up time and time again. The deepest connection friends can have is spiritual. Now, you might say, but this is very obvious. I mean, of course, you can't be friends with someone you don't have a connection with. But the challenge for us is to just think for a moment of what our society considers to be connected. Now, I'm not going to bash Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, but that is often what we associate with being connected with our friends, aren't we? But all those things are one-way conversations. It is a display of a nicely manicured life. Now, to be fair, it's safer that way, isn't it? A lot of people are talking these days about a generation growing up who are averse to risk. I wonder if we're averse to the risk of what it means to be true friends. Because connectedness requires vulnerability. It might require a conversation to go beyond the weather, or for us guys to go beyond football, and to go into, I guess, a type of conversation and hanging out together that shares life, the ups and the downs. And that we actually, as a true friend, will inquire about someone's heart and about their faith and about their walk with Jesus. Also allowing the other to actually know the real you. And we talked a little bit about this before, actually when we worked our way through the book of Proverbs, but also at the church weekend away. And I don't know how many of you were there, but we handed out these little pieces of the puzzle. And actually, the box is still in the back. Angelie, can you just look there right behind you? There's the box of puzzle pieces, and there's a few left. Because all these pieces together form a lovely picture of Bellevue Chapel, the building just down the road. Some of you have never been there before. One day we will return, hopefully before Jesus returns. But these puzzle pieces are a reminder that we're all part of God's universal church locally in Bellevue. But we were challenged to not just hold on to this puzzle piece ourselves. We could do two things. One was we could write our name on it and give it to someone else and start a connection of a friendship that hadn't been there before. One that might even cross barriers in the way that Jonathan and David crossed barriers. Maybe even an unlikely person. Or you could actually just keep the piece because you like this one. It's not a piece of the cloud or the sky, but actually write somebody else's name on it that you're committing yourself to getting to know better and loving and praying for. Well, I picked that piece up, and I have to hold my hand up, and I was challenged by looking at Jonathan and think, well, what have I done with this? And today I want to say, and Angel, I don't know if you're at the back later on, but get a piece of puzzle if you didn't get one. For those who weren't able to come to the church weekend or you've just joined Bellevue recently, get a piece of the puzzle and feel that you are connected in this church, but also do something with it and connect with someone else. Thinking of this question, who is God maybe asking you to befriend? And that's not just within the church, but also outside of the church. On Friday evening, we had a guest dinner, and it was fantastic. It was so beautiful to see some of you really courageously inviting people to come along and to share a meal together. But I know it's challenged some of us as well to think, actually, I don't have any non-Christian friends to invite. So who is God asking us to befriend? Or if we're already in a friendship, then how deeply connected are we? And who knows us really? And how can we truly share one another's stories and move on to good conversations and learn to listen well? So there's the first thing, the essence of friendship, the connectedness. Now, secondly, we're also reminded through Jonathan about the power of friendship, and that is in verse 3. We read there in verse 3 that Jonathan made a covenant with David. And the word covenant actually pops up time and time again, almost as if they keep renewing that covenant. Now, what's a covenant? It's an agreement, right? Just like we have agreements today. It's an agreement between two parties that commit to certain giving and taking. So, for example, a covenant or an agreement can be with your mobile phone provider. And they tell you, if you pay us, we'll serve you by giving you so many free text messages, or whatever your package may be. Well, interestingly, a covenant or an agreement can be motivated by two things. It can be purely business, where the covenant is there really for the gain and the good of yourself. What is the best deal I can get out of it? But did you know that an agreement can also be based on love? And if it's based on love, actually the agreement is for the sake of the other. God is often referred to as a God of covenant. And I think it's a wonderful word, so telling of what kind of God we serve and who loves us, that he's a God of covenant. Because it's not a covenant in any shape or form that is business-like, but motivated by love. It speaks of God's trustworthiness, of his faithfulness, of his generosity, that as a creator God, he would choose to commit himself to us, his creatures, and commit it in full commitment forever through sickness and in health. That's God. And that's the power of friendship. The power of friendship is faithfulness. If the essence is connectedness, the power is faithfulness. Now again, let's just think for a moment about our society. And I know we've talked about this before, but it's good to be reminded. Think of the word commitment. Or the idea of loyalty. That's maybe another word for faithfulness, loyalty. Well, ask any shop owner, or even any employer, or any person who runs a club, whether it's a sports club or something else, and they'll tell you, commitment has changed dramatically. We are, in many ways, a disposable society. We're always on the lookout for a better offer. We don't work in the same place anymore for 40 years. It might be a couple of years here, and then we get a better offer somewhere else, so we move. And the same with clubs or with shops, that even with all the loyalty schemes that are there, people are hard to truly commit. And it even starts on the playground, doesn't it? Or any board game that you've ever played. You start these alliances and you think someone is on your side, but actually a moment later they've stabbed you in the back. Not literally, of course. And I think the same is in office politics. And all this is because actually most friendships are for our own benefit. But if the power of true friendship lies in a friendship for the benefit of the other, it will actually help us to, and will keep us from giving up too easily when it's maybe started to become too much work or when it doesn't really suit us anymore. It should also help us or keep us from seeking friendships with the popular and the well-off. Because again, we would end up benefiting more than others. Now I know that we live in a more challenging time where there's an increased mobility. We move around a lot more. So it does make sense that we maybe don't have friendships anymore for 40 years or for life. But that shouldn't be an excuse. I think some friendships are simply for a season. But again, it shouldn't be an excuse. And actually, the church shouldn't be like the world where stickability has become rare. I mean, look again at Jonathan. When we look at Jonathan, it's not just a momentary connection with this David who's just defeated Goliath. But we see him ultimately being willing to risk his own life. If you have a Bible, turn with me to chapter 20. Because in chapter 20, we read the following in verse 30. That King Saul's anger is flared up at Jonathan. And the father says to the son, "You son of a perverse and rebellious woman." Isn't that a sad picture of how far Saul has gone away from God? He says, "Don't I know that you have sided with the son of Jesse?" He's not even calling him by his name. "And this is to your own shame and to the shame of the mother who bore you. And as long as the son of Jesse lives on this earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established. Now send and bring him to me, for he must die." And Jonathan's reply is very gracious. He said, "Why should he be put to death? What has he done?" Jonathan asked his father. But Saul hurled his spear at him to kill him. And so Jonathan knew that his father intended to kill David, and he leaves the table. Now there's a friend sticking up for his friend against his father. So again, The question, if we want to apply this to ourselves, is what friendships are we in at the moment? Are they mainly for our own benefit, or may it also be for the benefit of another? And what's our commitment like? Are we committed in such a way that actually we may be giving more than we receive? And I know, again, there's times where maybe actually we need to receive more than give. But I wonder sometimes if that's also an excuse, because as you give, you will also receive. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 24 says, "A friend sticks closer than a brother." So there we have the essence of friendship, which is connected to the power, which is faithfulness. But thirdly, let us also see the beauty of friendship. And people, I hope we can grasp this picture. Again, who was Jonathan? Jonathan was a prince, isn't that right? But Jonathan was also the eldest son of Saul, so that makes him the crown prince. Means he was the heir to the throne, which is a bit like Charles, or in the future, William. Now, on top of that, and sometimes I think Jonathan doesn't get the credit that he's due, but he's also already been shown to be a very courageous and a person full of valor. In chapter 14, for example, he was defeating Philistines long before David ever defeated Goliath. And beautifully, he also acknowledges that he does it with God's help. Do you see how that spiritual connection is there? And yet, what do we read in verse 4? Read along with me of chapter 18. Jonathan took off the robe that he was wearing, and he gave it to David. And he gave it along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow and his belt. Now what's going on? They've only just met. Is Jonathan just being incredibly generous in giving gifts? Is it David's birthday? Well, there is a generosity there. But it's much bigger than that, isn't it? To give your robe as the heir to the throne actually meant something much more symbolic. And turn with me to chapter 23 to really grasp the meaning of what Jonathan does here as a friend and the most beautiful thing that he does. Chapter 23, verse 15 through 18 says this. While David was at Horesh in the desert of Ziph, he's hiding there from the king, he learned that Saul had come out to take his life. And Saul's son, Jonathan, went to David at Horesh, and listen to this, he helped him find strength in God. Again, you can preach a whole sermon just on that. How are we helping our friend find strength with God? But then he says this, "Don't be afraid," he said. "My father Saul will not lay a hand on you, but you will be king over Israel, and I will be second to you." Could you have done that? Give up everything? Again, one commentary says that Jonathan must have long recognized that actually David was to be the Lord's choice to succeed his father rather than himself. But I think that is tough enough. But the thing I find with Jonathan is that he can actually rejoice in that. That Jonathan cares so much and wants so much the best for his friend, even if it means serving himself rather than being served, as must have been his expectation of his life. And people, that's a friendship we should want. That's the type of friend we should want to be. To care so much about the other person, to rejoice when they are blossoming and flourishing in their faith, and when God is using them mightily. There's a courageous selflessness to that. There's a self-denying giving in that. There's a sacrificial serving in all of that. And Jonathan did it. And people, I can't get over the fact that not only do we need this kind of friendship, but David needed Jonathan. And God's timing is perfect. So who will we be Jonathan to? But we must finish on the most important aspect, which isn't directly in the text, but the greatest reminder that Jonathan puts in front of us, and that is the most beautiful friendship that is on offer for all of us. What did Jonathan give David? His robe. There's a story that Jesus tells to his disciples of two sons. And the youngest son asks his dad for inheritance and goes and spends it all. What happens when he finally comes to his senses and returns? The father is on the lookout, ready to embrace him, and then what? A feast is prepared, and a robe is put on him, as well as a ring. He's accepted, reinstated as the son who was lost but is now found. But whose robe is the father giving to this lost son? It's the robe that Jesus took off for each one of us. The robe he took off when he washed his disciples' feet. The robe he took off when he left heaven to come down to give his life on the cross. And because he did that, for all of us, there's this friendship of total commitment and faithfulness from God to us, of the deepest spiritual connection available to us all. Now, I have to be very honest. I've always struggled to sing about Jesus as my friend. But I've now discovered that actually it's because I've always understood it in my experience of friendship, which has been shallow and buddy-buddy. Jesus is not buddy-buddy. He gave his life for you and for me. He's the most beautiful friend and friendship that we can enjoy in our life, that we actually need to walk this life until he returns or until we're going to be with him, to hold on to him in faith. Again, C.S. Lewis said, our ancestors actually regarded friendship as something that raised us almost above humanity, a love free from all duties, but those which love has freely assumed. It is the sort of love one can imagine between angels. Let's pray together and maybe take a moment before I hand back to Tim to not only reflect on how Jonathan is challenging us in our friendships, but also if actually we don't know this friendship of Jesus, to today take that opportunity to accept that friendship and to start experiencing it. So let's take a moment of silence and then I'll pray.